Welcome to the 302nd episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions and a look back at the last week in basketball action, both in college basketball and in the NBA. So let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our social media handles, which are at 4th and 24. Starting in college basketball, Patrick went 3-1 with his predictions. And in the NBA, Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions. Therefore, he went a total of 5-3 this week, and that brings his overall record to 1,283 and 803, which is a 61.5% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, it's always hard to decide how to pick games coming off the All-Star break. So I figured, a 2-2 week is probably in store for the NBA. You just never know with people coming back from injuries or if they don't. And, just a lot of teams will kind of hit the reset button and it'll go really well for them, or they'll hit the reset button and it'll go terribly because they had a lot of momentum and they lost it. But starting in the NBA, the Grizzlies beat the Magic 105-104. The Magic have been kind of sliding for a little bit, but, some of the games this weekend, most of the better games were on Sunday or Monday, but included some of the teams that already played earlier in the weekend that I already put in here. I'm mainly referring to the Timberwolves and Thunder, who played each other twice this weekend. Two very, very entertaining games. One of them went to overtime. Other one just really exciting back and forth regulation game. But the Grizzlies, they got the win. I predicted that correctly. The Cavs beat the Knicks 142-105, which I got correctly. The Knicks, after losing to the Celtics later in the weekend, are now 0-6, I think, against the top three teams in the league. I think the Thunder, the Cavs, and the Celtics, of course. So something to monitor later in the season. But then you have the Rockets. They beat the Timberwolves 121-115. I lost that prediction. And the Lakers beat the Nuggets 123-100. And the reason why I say that with such enthusiasm is not just because I like the Lakers, but because, I mean, they never beat the Nuggets. That is not an exaggeration. That has been something that we all know is, I mean, the Nuggets are the Lakers' kryptonite. They have been for literally years. I think at some point that was a 10 or an 11 game winning streak, including the playoffs. It might even have still been at 12 or 13 heading into that game, to be quite honest. I haven't followed that storyline this year because it was already ridiculous enough when it got to 10. Or I guess the Lakers won that one playoff game in that series last year, so maybe not. But still, rare for the Lakers to beat the Nuggets. Definitely wasn't going to pick it to happen, but happy that it did because, it shows that the new look Lakers might actually have a fighting chance in the West. Although, the Nuggets probably still aren't the team to beat, but they're definitely one of the elite that exists in the West. But then going on to college basketball, number 14, Michigan State beat number 12, Michigan, 75-62. I actually did pick the Michigan State would win that game. Michigan in its last eight games heading into that one was 7-1 with a point differential of -4. So it's just kind of, they're an odd team. They really just win a lot of close games. And it's interesting because the beginning of the year and the reason why their resume is not on the two or the three line is because they lost a ton of close games at the beginning of the year. They lost to Wake Forest by two. They lost to Arkansas by three. They lost to Oklahoma by one. So they lose a ton of close games. What was the rep going into conference play? And now the rep in conference play is they win a bunch of close games that they shouldn't be winning. So it's really funny how that's kind of flipped on its head over the course of the season. But I felt like Michigan State was playing better basketball heading into that game with the way that they played against Purdue and just looked angry after losing that game to Indiana at home. I feel like teams had kind of figured out the Spartans and how to adjust to them. But, a legendary coach like Tom Izzo, he's going to find a way to readjust to what teams he will readjust to other teams' adjustments, I guess is the best way to put it. He'll do it quickly, and he was able to do that. And then also they just actually hit some threes for once, which they don't do. But I got that prediction correct. Number 4, Alabama beat number 17, Kentucky, 96-83. Got that one correct as well. Mark Sears had a really good week, dropped 30 points twice, 65 points in the two games last week. And then number 6, Tennessee beat number 7, Texas A&M, tongue twister, 77-69. That was the game I got wrong this weekend. Tennessee going on the road using 30 points from Chaz Lanier to win that game. And then number 5, Houston beat Iowa State, number 8, Iowa State, I should say, 68-59 on the road or at home against kind of a shorthanded version of that Iowa State team, but still a good win nonetheless for Houston.
Okay, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted on our social media on Thursday. Let's now turn our attention to a little more detailed look at NBA and college basketball beyond Patrick's weekend predictions. And we will start in college basketball with the most significant action from last week.
Well, starting with the early games from last week, obviously, as I say, Tuesday is kind of the midweek Saturday of college basketball. A lot of primetime windows that have a lot of great games going on. It was Oklahoma who was playing at number two Florida. They lost 85-63. Florida picking up another quality win. They'll have another opportunity to do that tonight. They play Georgia on the road. Georgia needing that one on the bubble, and also obviously a rivalry game. So a lot at stake in that game. But then number five Houston beat Arizona State 80-65 on the road. Houston just pummels the Big 12. I mean, I'll get to it later, but they, a lot of people thought that Houston's dominance would stop now that they were in a better conference. You know, what happens when they play 10 or 12 great teams a year, 10 or 12 quad one games, instead of just that one game at Memphis or at home against Memphis and maybe FAU in a good year, that kind of thing. I guess actually FAU and Houston were never in the American together, but a USF, teams like that, Tulane, for example, like any team that was just decent in the American in any year, and or Wichita State is probably a better example. And here's the thing. They have not slowed down at all. They are just as dominant as they were in the American, as they are, like they are just as dominant in the Big 12 as they were in the American, which is insane. But at the same time, it used to lead to a lot of disrespect from the tournament committee in terms of seeding, even though predictive metrics thought they were, up there with the best. The committee wouldn't give them that respect because their strength of schedule just wasn't that good. The amount of the quantity of quality wins was lower than other teams, even though they had some quality wins in non-con every year. But this year it's going to be the opposite. I mean, they have just mauled through a really tough schedule. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. Although we'll see if they're one seed. There's still a lot of discussion there. Number 21, Mississippi State beat number seven, Texas A&M, 70-54. A&M, of course, also lost later in the week to Tennessee, which I talked about in prediction. So an 0-2 week for A&M, who entered the week as a two seed, now probably somewhere along the 2-3 border, although it's hard to see them dropping because TCU beat number nine Texas Tech 69-66. You know what? I have to say, I feel quite validated with that loss because I did say on the podcast on Tuesday morning, the day of this game, I just don't trust Texas Tech as a top 15 team in the country. I went on a rant about it, and I think, I don't think that they're a bad team. I just don't think that, if you said line up the teams in the top 15, two of them you have to pick to not make the Sweet 16 out of the current top 15, they would be an easy pick for me. I mean, I think there are a ton of teams in the top 15 that, are a little more volatile, but I just don't see the high level play there that if they've run into a team that's hot in March for one weekend. I don't think that they're going to be able to handle that. I think they're a solid team. I just don't see them as a top 15 team, personally. They just don't have the wins for me. I know predictive metrics love this team, but I am quite on the side of the resume metrics who don't love this team so much. Then you have number 11, Wisconsin, who beat Illinois 95-74. Probably Wisconsin is probably the opposite of Texas Tech. They have all the wins to back it up, but the eye test at times is kind of not ugly, but it's just not exactly what you'd think you'd see from a top 10 team. They don't look the part necessarily. Of a top 10 team, but I think you just have to look at their wins and realize that they have beaten way too many teams to be outside of the top 10 or the top 15 at this point in the season. Just a lot of good wins for Wisconsin, and they beat Illinois here by a solid margin, and that wouldn't be Illinois' first big, or last big loss of the week. Number 14, Michigan State beat number 13, Purdue 75-66. This was the revenge game that I was talking about with the Spartans after losing to Indiana. Playing well, obviously, bigger game later in the week, but needed that one to stay in the Big Ten title race for sure. Definitely needed to go at least 1-1 against Purdue and Michigan with a tough schedule upcoming. They still have to play at Maryland this week. But then BYU beat number 23, Kansas, 91-57. BYU just, I mean, they had probably the best week of any team in the country, but they just hammered Kansas. And, Kansas can get really, really stagnant on offense. They really have to move the ball well to actually score. I mean, they just have terrible spacing because their best, you could argue three of their best four players, with the exception of Zeke Mayo, are big men. And that's the problem. They have Badunga, they have Adams, and they have Dickinson, but two of them are on the floor at the same time as each other, like 90% of the time you watch this team. And the spacing just isn't quite there because Dickinson is not going to play a power forward spot where he kind of sits on the wing and gets ready for catch and shoot three. He's just not going to do that. So if you can limit the high-low passing with them, and you force them to shoot, their guards just haven't been that good this year. And it's been a problem. That's why they have these kind of really weak scoring outputs. So if they're not locked in on the defensive end, and if they're not moving the ball well enough to get those big men open looks or get them the ball in the paint or near the paint, they're just a terrible, terrible team. And that's kind of what you saw in this game against BYU, just that lack of spacing, no offense game. Then you have number one, Auburn. They beat Arkansas 67 to 60. Auburn's not quite beating teams by the ridiculous margins that they did to start the season, but they still aren't losing any games. They have 14 quad one wins now, which is just ridiculous. They're 14 and two against quad one. Most teams haven't played 14 quad one games in the first place. I mean, you look at some other teams. Tennessee's played 14 of them. They're also in the SEC. Florida's played 8. Houston's played 11. Duke has played 9. So Auburn has more quad one wins than most teams have had quad one opportunities. And again, it's not like Tennessee was ever going to go 14 and 0 in those games. So no one's going undefeated. So it's crazy that they've even been able to pull out this ridiculous run. But you know, how often do you see a team play the number one strength of schedule in the country and also end up with the number one record in the country? It just doesn't happen that often. And that's why Auburn gets all the praise that they do. They just don't lose games. Then you have number 15, Missouri. They beat number four, Alabama, 110 to 98. A big win for Missouri. You know, they've kind of surged up the seed list and brackets and perception, all of them, late in the season. But as long as they keep winning, I think they're going to keep doing that. You know, they only need to go like 1-1 every week because the SEC is a gauntlet. And, you know, they were able to do that. They beat Alabama this week, got a big, big win, and then talk about what happened to them later in the week later. But number 17, Kentucky beat Vanderbilt 82 to 61. Again, another team that just needs to go 1-1 every week, pretty much. Vanderbilt, you could argue maybe the same, although probably need the wins a little bit more since they're on the bubble if they want to be safe in the picture. Although I have them a lot more clear of the bubble than a lot of other people seem to in the bracketology world. But you know, it's always a difference of personal opinion. I think everybody has them in, though. They're definitely not among the teams that are in danger of missing in danger of, if the season ended tomorrow, who would miss the tournament if there were two bid sealers. They're not one of those teams. They're definitely not safe, but you know, I think they're a little safer than people are giving them credit for. Then you have number 20, Maryland, who beat USC 88 to 71. Maryland, it's between Maryland and Michigan State for the hottest team in the Big Ten. And frankly, I don't think it's that close. If you just look at eye test, if you look at results, yeah, Michigan's lost like one game in the last nine, and is still tied for first in the conference. Wisconsin has lost once in their last eight or nine and won at Purdue for sure. Like, I get it. But Maryland and Michigan State, eye test and just in general, and with wins, they're just playing a level above everybody else. Maryland hasn't played a close game in forever. It's just, it's not, they're really just not fair playing against other teams right now. They arguably have the number one starting five in the country, which is crazy to say for a team that's barely in the top 20. They definitely have the best starting unit in the Big Ten. The issue is they just don't get any bench points. They had 3 bench points in this entire game, but again, their starters scored 85, so it didn't really matter. Penn State, they beat Nebraska, who's in the last four in currently for me, 89 to 72, although maybe after last night they might not be. But then continuing with some bubble action on Saturday, West Virginia, or sorry, this is on Wednesday, I believe. West Virginia in the last four byes, they beat Cincinnati 62 to 59. Cincinnati in my next four out still, as my most recent update yesterday morning. Boise State in the next four out beat New Mexico 86 to 78. Boise State had games against New Mexico and San Diego State, I believe, or no, sorry, Nevada on the road this week, and they needed both of those games. One of them, the New Mexico game, a borderline quad one game. It's still quad two for now, but New Mexico was, I think, it's 22 and 4, 22 and 5 on the season. So definitely going to be a signature win for the Broncos, even if, the quad system doesn't say it's a quad one win. It's a very, very high quad two win. And it's a win over a team in the tournament field, which the committee does value. But then you have Northwestern, who beat Ohio State, who is now in my last four in 70-49. Just, I don't know how it happened, but Ohio State was playing well against Michigan, lost that game 86-83 at home. But since that close loss, they have just unraveled. I mean, they have not been able to get anything going on the offensive end. They're now sitting at 15-13 overall. And just the amount of losses, no matter how hard their schedule is, it's just a lot to overlook. I mean, it's really, really hard to overlook. Just 13 losses just looks really, really ugly on a resume. And that's what Ohio State has currently. Talk about what happened to them later in the week, later. But number 14, Michigan State beat number 12, Michigan 75-62. Talked about it in my predictions. Villanova beat number 16, Marquette 81-66. Marquette has won two of its last six games. So if you're looking for a team to pick against in the tournament, similar to kind of a Wisconsin last year where they just kind of faded at the end of the year, right now I'd say Marquette is that team. I actually don't think that, when I watch Marquette, I don't get the same kind of vibes that I did watching Wisconsin last year at the end of the season. I felt like Wisconsin looked like a team that was just not playing good basketball. I don't think Marquette is quite in the same category, but I think, another loss or two, and it's just impossible to ignore. But for sure, definitely one of those teams that if you don't like picking teams that ended the season poorly, do not pick Marquette. Then you have number one Auburn, who beat Georgia 82-70, excuse me. Auburn, again, doing their thing. Number two Florida beat LSU 79-65. LSU had this game close for a little bit, but then Florida pulled away towards the end of the second half and just never really looked back. Then you have the big one, the non-conference matchup at MSG that everybody was talking about for a few weeks, and then everybody realized it wasn't going to be a good game that had half a brain cell. Duke, the number three team in the country, beat Illinois 110-67. Again, Wisconsin beat this team by 20 earlier this week. Maryland beat them by 25 in Champaign earlier this month. Illinois is just not that good. I think people need to just realize that they have a lot of talent, but they just aren't that great of a team. And they've been dealing with a lot of injury issues recently. Merez Johnson Jr. Now out for a little bit with a wrist injury. Tomislav Ivicic had mono, which took him out for a few games. Kasper Siakoutsonis missed a few games with an injury. And they just haven't put it together because of the fact that they have like 9 or 10 new faces all on their roster. And even the returners, they haven't played like the returners like Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn, they haven't played with the other guys on this roster because they're all new. So it doesn't really matter. They just don't have a lot of, they have no roster continuity. And when you add injuries into the mix for teams that don't have a lot of continuity and don't have experience playing with each other, these are the results that you end up getting. It also doesn't help that they're in the 300s in 3-point percentage, but they're top five in the country in attempts. At the beginning of the year, it was working. That's why they had outputs of 100 plus, like maybe 4 or 5 times in October, in November and December, in early December. But since then, they've just kind of fallen off against better teams. Just haven't gotten the threes going. And when they don't shoot threes well, they're not going to win games because they take so many of them. And they're also, again, losing kind of their paint presence because they've had those injuries between Ivicic and Morris Johnson. So Illinois is still a team that has a lot of talent, but just not a very well put together team, not a well-oiled machine like a lot of the other top teams. And Duke is the exact opposite. Duke has a ton of talent. They have more talent than Illinois. Obviously, they have Cooper Flagg, the number one pick in the draft, and probably the number one player in college this year, probably going to be the National Player of the Year. Again, two horse race between him and Jahni Broome. But they're also really good defensively. They have a lot of offensive talent, but it's the defensive end that really separates Duke from the other teams. And then you have number four, Alabama, who beat number 17, Kentucky, 96-83. Talked about that in predictions. Actually talked about these next two games in predictions. Number five, Houston beat number eight, Iowa State, 68-59. Iowa State without Keyshawn Gilbert, excuse me, and Curtis Jones, who both are their top two scorers. So they were missing 30 points per game on the road at Houston. Very tough task to overcome. I'm surprised they even kept that game close, but kudos to them actually for doing that. Then you have number six, Tennessee, who beat number seven, Texas A&M, 77-69. Again, Chaz Lanier, 30 points in that victory. Number 9, Texas Tech beat West Virginia 73-51. Texas Tech is, I will say, dealing with some injury issues right now. So when I went on that rant, that is, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm judging them only by the team that's playing when they're injured. I'm just judging them on not having too many great wins this season, other than that win at Houston a few weeks ago. But then you have Oregon, who beat number 11 Wisconsin 77-73 in overtime. We know Oregon is capable of beating good teams. They are number 2 in the country in quad one wins. They are tied with Tennessee for that mark. So this is a team that can take down top teams at a rate higher than Alabama, higher than Florida, higher than Duke, maybe because they played more games, of course, but still a very, 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 very gifted team when it comes down to playing against top level talent. They just have sometimes played close games in the Big Ten and haven't been able to put it together at the end of the game, or they've dealt with foul trouble or whatever it is. This game, they put it all together despite playing 6-on-5 because the refs gave Wisconsin the ball 2 or 3 times on just obviously horrible calls. And, you know, I don't spend a lot of time complaining about officials on this podcast, unless it's really the talk of the town per se. But that game has got to be the worst officiated game I've ever seen in terms of end of game replays. They literally gave the ball to Wisconsin on and out of bounds where no Oregon player ever touched the ball. They also gave it to Wisconsin on a play where I remember that everybody was saying in a group chat of mine who's watching that game, oh, this is Oregon ball. How are they even going to get close in this game? Because, by the way, Wisconsin, you know, if you look at ESPN win probability, had like a 99% chance to win this game. They're up by 14 or 15 with 7 minutes left. But look, in a group chat, people were saying, oh, they're going to give this ball to Oregon. Very obviously out on Wisconsin. It's going to be Oregon ball, and they're going to have a shot to tie the game. And I said, hold on. It's Big Ten officiating. You never know what could happen. They might just give the ball to Wisconsin. It's obviously the wrong call, but, you know, they're not going to give it to Oregon anyway. Lo and behold, they gave the ball to Wisconsin. Ball don't lie, though. The inbounds pass was thrown off of John Blackwell's knee. Clear as day, no Oregon player touched it. They did still review it, even though there wasn't even anybody there. But they gave the ball to Oregon. Oregon ties the game, sends it to overtime, wins it in overtime. Well-deserved road win for Oregon. And finally, just getting back in the win column against a really good team. That's what they've needed for a while. And you know, their resume has been fine the whole time, but just in terms of how the level of play at the end of the season, this is a win that the Ducks desperately needed. Then you have Arkansas in the last four byes. Speaking of getting a win that you desperately need, they beat number 15, Missouri, 92-85. Arkansas, again, needs that one on the bubble. Barely in my last four byes, I will say. Not safe at all. And I think a few people still might even have this team out of the tournament heading into today. But then you have number 18, Clemson. They beat SMU 79-69, SMU in the first four out. So an important win for Clemson to go get on the road, even though Boopy Miller wasn't playing for the Mustangs. But they need to win games. They have not beaten a team in the tournament field. They don't have a quad one win. That's just something that you can't have as a bubble team. Then you have BYU. They beat number 19 Arizona 96-95 on the road. Okay, I take it back. That the Wisconsin game wasn't the worst officiated game of the week. I forgot this also happened. That wasn't a foul. Last play of the game, BYU got two free throws to take the lead. It just wasn't a foul. They also, on the play before, didn't give Caleb Love a continuation when they probably should have given him a continuation on an and one. So end result is Arizona was down one. If they had gotten that and one and he had made the free throw, they would have been up two. And even though BYU got that foul call, the game still would have at best gone to overtime. But instead, the phantom foul on the other end gives BYU two free throws to take the lead. BYU wins the game in regulation. A great win for BYU, though, and you know what? The tournament committee does not care about bad officiating at the end of games because it happens to everybody over the course of the season. So you just can't, that can't be a factor, unfortunately, in brackets. So BYU gets two huge wins over the course of the week and moves very, very safely into the field after really hovering on the bubble pretty much all season and most of the time being a few teams, like multiple teams, out. But then you have Oklahoma in the last four byes, again, just like Arkansas, not very safely there, but they're there for now. Beat number 21, Mississippi State, 93-87. A really good win for them. They needed that one. Number 23, Kansas, had their get-back game against Oklahoma. They beat them 96-64. There's the offense when they do pass the ball well. Then Vanderbilt beat number 24, Ole Miss, 77-72. Again, on the bubble, need that win. Number 25, Louisville, beat Florida State, 89-81. That's another win that the Cardinals will take. Although, you know, it was a close one, but Florida State's a decent enough team that it's excusable for Louisville. They're allowed to almost lose a game here or there. They only have lost two games in the ACC all season long, so they're fine. Then you have Cincinnati, who's in the next four out. They beat TCU 75-63. Both of those teams on the bubble. TCU a little bit farther out, but an important win nonetheless. NC State pulled off an upset, beating Wake Forest, who's in the first four out, 85-73 at home. Boise State, as I mentioned earlier, beat Nevada 70-69, a very important win for them. They're now, I think they're five teams out in my most recent bracket. So next four out is the label, but pretty much first four out. They're right there with those other teams, just needing a few more wins at the end of the season, potentially to sneak into the tournament. And staying in the Mountain West, you have Utah State. They beat San Diego State, who's also in my last four byes. Staying out west, but not in the Mountain West, St. Mary's clinched the WCC championship and a sweep of Gonzaga on the season with a 74-67 road victory. Interesting to note that Gonzaga has a tradition, and I talked to you about this off the podcast. Gonzaga has a tradition of starting all of their seniors on senior night. Joe Few, Mark Few's son, started the game, played 2 minutes. He doesn't play at all. He's, you know, one of those players who only plays at the end of the game. They gave up a 9-0 run to start the game, and that might have been the difference in this game. So, you know, tradition over winning games, I think, is just a stupid thing. And Gonzaga has gotten a little arrogant because they just think that, you know, their conference sucks and nobody can beat them at home, which for the most part has been true for, you know, up until 4 or 5 years ago. But they need to start being a little more careful. They're playing with their food a little bit too much, and they have been all season long. But finally caught up to them in this game. Then you have South Carolina. They beat Texas, who's in the last four, in 84-69. This South Carolina team has just been searching for a victory all season long. I mean, they are actually not that bad of a team, but the SEC is just so tough that they're not on the level of any of those teams. You know, if they were in, I think I've talked about this before, and if they were in the Big Ten or the Big 12, you know, I'm not saying they would be in the middle of the conference. They'd still be at the bottom of the middle of the conference, but, you know, they'd be in the position of a team like USC or like a Penn State that, you know, has like six or five or six conference wins in one of those conferences. Then you have number 10, St. John's, who beat UConn 89-75. The bubble's so bad that UConn really isn't dropping onto that with that loss, but they're kind of clear of that big line of the bubble. But St. John's, on the other hand, definitely trending upwards in seed lines. The committee is not going to give them as much respect as the AP poll has, which is rightfully so. But St. John's still putting together a great season. Then you have Indiana, who is in the first four out. They needed this win. They got it over number 13, Purdue, 73-58. Mike Woodson sitting in the chair that is believed to be the chair that Bob Knight threw on the court 40 years ago to the day of that game, which is just honestly pretty hilarious that Indiana has kept that around. But Mike Woodson may be bringing some good juju with that chair. We'll see if he brings it out again soon. I think might be a good idea. Hey, they beat Purdue by 15. By the way, Purdue conceded a 28-3 run in the middle of this game, and they've also now lost four in a row. So Boilermakers are definitely trending in the wrong direction. But they go back home. They have a chance to set things right this weekend, or actually this week. Then you have number 22, Memphis. They beat FAU 84-65. Memphis getting some wins by margin, which is what they need to improve their metrics. Xavier, who's in the next four out, beat Seton Hall 73-66. They should not have let this game get this close, but they did. And that's going to hurt them in metrics as much as that's kind of, you know, not that great of a thing to harp on. It is true. Then you have UCLA, who beat Ohio State. Still barely holding on to a tournament spot in the last four in 69-61. UCLA, they haven't scored over 70 points in like 7 or 8 games, but they're still 5-2 in those games, I think, from what I remember when I looked at it. But you know what? They're leaning into the fact that they're a defensive team. They know that. And you know, earlier in the season, they kind of tried to speed it up a little bit at times. It just did not work. And now they've kind of backed away from that and recognized who they are. And they're going to continue to be a defensive team heading forward. Then you have North Carolina in the first four out, who beat Florida State 96-85 on the road. The ugliest game of the week, number 15, Michigan beat Nebraska 49-46. That's a quad one win for Michigan, and it's a win that pushes Nebraska even further down on the bubble. For Michigan, do they deserve credit for a quad one win for this game? Probably not. They didn't play like They didn't play well enough to get a quad one win, but you know what? That's Nebraska's problem for also playing so poorly despite being right on the bubble. And that has been a problem for the last few weeks for Nebraska. They have just come out flat in so many games. The only guy who is playing his heart out every night is Bryce Williams. Everybody else on that team has had a game or two or three or four where they just don't play well. And this game, I think until actually at halftime, Bryce Williams had 18 points and the team had 21. So if nobody else is going to score, they're not going to win any games. And that's kind of the problem with Nebraska right now. As good as Bryce Williams is, he can't score 50 or 60 a game. And their defense isn't good enough to hold teams to 40 or 50 on a consistent basis. They can do it, you know, they can do it in a game where Michigan's not shooting the ball well, and they're on the road and in a low possession game. They can't do that every game. Then you have number four Houston, who beat number 10 Texas Tech on the road, 69 to 61. So in this series, 1-1 on the season. Houston moves to 16-1 in the Big 12, which is just crazy. Almost as crazy as Auburn, only having one loss in the SEC. And then Kansas, who beat Colorado 71 to 64 to kind of get right there.
All right, that wraps up our look at college basketball action for the past week. Let's turn our attention to the NBA.
We will start, as always, in the Eastern Conference with the NBA, where, of course, it's the Cleveland Cavaliers who are sitting at the top of the standings as they have been all season. They're at 47-10, best record in the NBA. They've won seven in a row. Then you have the Celtics, who are 41-16. They're six games back. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They've won five in a row. The Knicks, as I said, lost both those games over the weekend to the Cavs and Celtics, but they're still in third, and they are 4.5 games ahead of the Pacers and the Bucks, who are tied for the fourth and fifth spots at 32-24. The Bucks have won four in a row, though, so watch out for them. But just behind them, the Pistons at 32-26 have won seven in a row of their own, so tying the Cavs for the longest win streak active or longest active win streak in the league, which is crazy. But good for the Pistons to really, I mean, this is a team that now you're looking at it. They have a nine game cushion on the final spot in the play-in. So, you know, should they be looking for the play-in when they're currently in the sixth seed? No. But at the same time, the Pistons just need to get into the playoffs for the first time in forever. And even if that's through the play-in tournament, I think there's no shame in that for a franchise that has struggled so much recently. Then you have the Magic. They're at 29-30. Like I said, they've been fading for a while. They've kind of leveled off, though. They're at 5-5 in their last 10, but still 4.5 back, or 3.5 games, excuse me, behind the Pistons for that sixth spot. Then you have the Hawks and the Heat, who are 1.5 games back of the Magic. Hawks at 27-31, the Heat at 26-30. The Bulls are four games back of the Heat and the Hawks. They are at 23-35, which is including 3-7 in their last 10, which is just ridiculous that that is even in position for a play-in spot. But it is because it's the East. Then you have the Nets, who are 21-36. They are 7-3 in their last 10. So the Nets actually trending up. Maybe they make the do they make the play-in? They probably do at this rate. Because the Bulls have not been playing good basketball recently. And also, the other team that hasn't been playing good basketball, it's the 76ers. They have lost eight games in a row, 20-37 now on the season. Even if they had just gone 2-6 in their last eight, they would be a half game out of a playoff spot behind the Bulls. But because they've lost eight in a row, they're 2.5 back of the Bulls, with the Nets one game ahead of them as well. Then you have the Raptors. They're 3-7 in their last 10. 18-39 on the season, but somehow only 4.5 games out of a playoff spot. So they're still worth mentioning. Then you have the Hornets, who are 2-8 in their last 10, way out of it at 14-42, and the Wizards, who are 10-47, despite going 4-6 in their last 10 games. Then you have the top of the West, where everybody's pretty much playing well, in this, at least in the top four of this conference. And we'll talk about that right now. The Oklahoma City Thunder at 46-11, playing really good basketball. Like I said, they did lose to the Timberwolves last night, but they beat them on Sunday on the road. So 8-2 in their last 10. Good for the Thunder. Then you have the Nuggets, who are 8.5 back of the Thunder. So a large, large, large cushion for the one seed for the Thunder, despite the fact that the Nuggets have gone 9-1 in their last 10. The only loss coming to the Lakers, who are in fourth. I'll get to that in a second. But first, the Grizzlies are 37-20. They are a half game behind the Nuggets, 6-4 in their last 10. Then you have the Lakers and the Rockets, who are both tied 11 games behind the Thunder, 2 games behind the Grizzlies, and 2.5 behind the Nuggets for the 2 seed. Lakers are 8-2 in their last 10, and they're 34-21 on the season. The Rockets, of course, 35-22. That is why they have the same games back as the Lakers, but not the same record. I have to say, if the Lakers get a playoff route where they play the Rockets in the first round and the Thunder in the second round, and then the conference finals is just, whoever makes it out of Denver and Memphis and, Minnesota or Dallas, who they might be playing in that round. I like the Lakers. That's a really, really good route for them. They are the experienced team. The Thunder are still the Thunder are still a young team. I mean, this is youth versus LeBron James, and we've seen this before. I don't think that the Thunder are very far away from a championship window. It might start this year, honestly, but I think this could be really similar to, that Celtics Cavs series a long, long time ago, probably what, 5 or 6 years ago, where LeBron was obviously still in Cleveland and beat the Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum Celtics, despite the fact that the Celtics had a really great regular season. And I think that was also the Kyrie team as well, that the Celtics had, but just not enough to beat LeBron because, just not enough experience. And I think that could be what we see this season again. With the Lakers, with this new roster, Luka has a lot more playoff experience than any of the Thunder player th than any of the Thunder stars do, and he's the Lakers' young star. So, the rest of the roster obviously very, very experienced for the Lakers, especially LeBron, and Dorian Finney-Smith as well. A lot of comfortability there with him and Luka, and they know how each other want to play in the playoffs. I think it'll work out really well for the Lakers, and I think they probably are the biggest threat. To the Thunder, at least early on in the playoffs, depending on how the matchups shake out. I think Denver's also still a big threat to the Thunder as well. But in terms of how the matchups look right now, I think the Lakers would be that team that I think would be able to knock the Thunder out before the conference finals. Then you have the Clippers. They are the 6th seed, currently 31-26, 4-6 in their last 10, which means they're tied with the Timberwolves, who are 5-5 in their last 10. They are both 4 games back of that 4-5 tie between the Lakers and the Rockets. But this is an important spot. I mean, this is the difference between playing in a play-in game and not playing in a play-in game at all. So the Clippers currently on the right side of that because of tiebreakers. Timberwolves currently on the wrong side. The Mavs not too far behind, just a half game back of the Timberwolves and the Clippers, currently sitting in the 8th seed. They are 5-5 in their last 10. Then you have the Warriors, who all of a sudden with Jimmy Butler playing a little better, they've won 3 in a row. They're 6-4 in their last 10. They are only a half game back of the Mavs and 1 game back of the Timberwolves. And interestingly enough, all these teams have 27 losses. The Timberwolves, the Mavs, and the Warriors. The Clippers have 26, but it's close. This is a race where it's literally down to the loss column versus the win column. The loss column is identical. So Golden State definitely still not out of it just yet. Then you have Sacramento, who is above 500 at 5-5. They're 29-28. They are 2 games back of that Clippers Timberwolves tie. And because of the fact that the Suns and the Spurs have faded, they're now honestly a little bit safe in the play-in. I don't think that it's a guarantee that they're going to make it, but they have a pretty good chance pretty late into the season here because the Suns are 27-30. They are 28 in their last, sorry, 28. They're 2-8 in their last 10, 2 games back of the Kings. And then the Spurs, as we now know, will be without Greg Popovich and Victor Wembanyama for the rest of the season. So 24-31 is their record, 4 games back of the Kings, 3-7 in their last 10. Wembanyama dealing with deep vein thrombosis, I think is how you say it. So yeah, it's a tough injury for him. It's basically blood clotting, kind of. We'll see what happens with that injury long term, but for sure going to keep him out for the rest of the season. That revealed, of course, after the All-Star break, which means that between Wembanyama being out and no Popovich, I just don't think that team has what it takes to make the playoffs. Then you have the Blazers, who frankly are the closest team, honestly, at this point to making it, who aren't currently in the picture. They are 4.5 games back of the Kings, but they're 6-4 in their last 10, 25-33. And they've been playing well overall since a really, 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 really rough start to the season. And then finally, in last place with the worst records in the West, but still a few games better than the Wizards and the Hornets. At 14-43, you have the Pelicans and the Jazz.
All right. Well, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 4th, where we will look back at Patrick's weekend predictions. and talk again about basketball with another weekly review of both the NBA and college basketball action. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays throughout the season. And as we mentioned before, his picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday. All of this content is on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24 on Twitter and Instagram. And some of that content is on our website, 4thand24.com. Thank you for listening.